It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and community can create unique interactions and conversations. And in today's conversation, we're going to be talking about how HUDOX, which we'll find out a little bit more in a minute, puts a spotlight on creators and community members, including conversations that happen when there are important and inspiring themes. And we can share that through the art of storytelling. And with me, I have Rocky Walls, founder of a couple of things, but HUDOX is one of them. Rocky, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back, Mark.
You're welcome. And Caitlin Calhoun, who is a board member for HUDOX and a featured film member on there. And you run your own independent film company too, which is really cool. Welcome, Caitlin.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's lovely to meet you, and I'm excited to be here.
Great. So, you know, I think about independent films and films that could never get produced otherwise because of either funding or, you know, that, you know, somebody at the corporate level doesn't think that that's, you know, the message they want to deliver. And there's so many themes and so many topics that are in that category. So why don't we start with you, Rocky, because you're creating this platform as a way to be able to get those independent films out, which I think is so critical.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, these are oftentimes films that somebody is creating because they're passionate about a topic. And, you know, there's a reason that even Hollywood and historically Hollywood films call the first stage of creating a film development hell, because most films that are sort of just a little baby idea don't ever amount to anything. They don't ever even get out of development. Those initial conversations of, you know, can this thing really happen? Can we pull it off? Can we get funding? Is it even a good idea? And so if you think about that at like a micro level, without access to big studios or big budgets, and you're looking at, okay, I'm just, you know, a person or a team of people who are passionate, we have the equipment, we want to make it, the hurdles are immense. And so what's really interesting is that when those films get made, you have filmmakers who have put forth their, you know, blood, sweat, and tears in order to get a story told. And then oftentimes, I won't say all the time, because I don't want to discredit the filmmakers who do know better, but oftentimes filmmakers are blindsided by the fact that it's not a build it, they will come type of thing, where you know, you've put all this work together to make a film, then you present it and you're like, look, everybody, we did it. Like we told a story that, you know, without our blood, sweat, and tears might not have been told. And then oftentimes it's crickets, because over the last 10 to 15 years, we've kind of created this culture or mindset that, well, you know, the internet, obviously, everybody sees everything on the internet. So if you just put the thing on Facebook or put the thing on YouTube, people will find it and watch it. And unfortunately, we know that that's not true. And so, yeah, what we did with HUDOX, which we can talk, you know, I want you, Mark, to ask the questions about HUDOX, but just, you know, very quickly, the genesis of that is that fact that we have all these wonderful, talented filmmakers telling exceptional stories on one side of this metaphorical kind of chasm. And then on the other side, we have all these people who actually want to watch them. You know, they're people who are buying local, they're shopping local, they're eating local. Why wouldn't they want to watch locally produced stories, especially if the stories are about locally relevant things? And then, you know, how do you build the bridge between them? Well, you create a streaming service that curates those stories and then puts them in front of people all in one place. And you make it a nonprofit so that the subscription fees and all of the sponsorships and everything go to pay the filmmakers for their work. So that's what HUDOX is. And yeah, we're having a blast with it so far.
That's really exciting. And so, Caitlin, you joined on not only as a filmmaker, but also as a board member. And what made you want to become a part of this whole project?
Right. I think Rocky spoke a lot to this, but the idea that it takes a lot of effort to actually build a community around your film. So if you just kind of drop it once you finish the film and you're like, where's the community? I thought they were going to be here. It's kind of, it's really awesome that WhoDocs is kind of already built that for you in a way. Especially like if you are very specific with your film and it's the community that you live in that you're making the film about, it's kind of the perfect, just drop it there. And then on, you know, another side of that, it's so motivating as a filmmaker knowing, you know, that you need to build the community. Once you make a few and you're like, okay, maybe I should build a community as I'm going. It's motivating to know that at least the WhoDocs community will be there when I'm done. You know, even if I don't do a great job building community this time and I'm learning how to do it, at least WhoDocs will be there. And so for me, as a local Indiana-based filmmaker, I was just really excited about what this could mean for the industry as a whole and just kind of the parade that we're starting, you know, and the empowering nature of the thing. So yeah, I'm getting chills because it is a pretty cool thing. And you know, now we're a bit in and it's just seeing the impact it's had already is awesome. So
Rocky, it is really interesting to me, the model that you're using. And I love the word curation in it. You know, my background's in museum work and I think about that, but you know, that's been what's lacking on the internet for a very long time. You're able to almost get anything and everything. And that's a problem because nobody really curated it. And so by no curation, you couldn't really, in the clutter, you couldn't find things. And so you're really narrowing that clutter, if I understand that correctly, to be specific, not necessarily to a theme, but specific to a set of parameters.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we're, you know, we certainly didn't invent that concept or that idea. We're riding a wave of niche-based media platforms and services. You know, if you think about it, you ask yourself, well, okay, 5 years ago, would I have imagined now that I might be subscribed to 5 or 6 streaming services? I mean, you probably wouldn't have guessed that. Maybe you'd say, well, I know I've got my Netflix, I'm good to go. But now we have Netflix and Disney Plus and Paramount Plus and whatever the Magnolia, Chip and Joanna Gaines dude. You know, I mean, like everybody has it, because we understand and we know that, to your point, that if I give you everything, you end up kind of with nothing, right?
Right.
It's the same reason why people flocked to streaming services from cable to begin with. I've got 400 channels, but nothing to watch. The same thing. I mean, we're just, you know, we kind of relive these cycles. And so, you know, I don't think we could have pulled off WhoDocs 2 years ago because I don't think that the market would have been ready for that necessarily. But now I think it's a little bit, to your point, a little bit more palatable to think, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I guess if I really do want to support local film, if I want to watch stories, listen to stories that are relevant to my community, that make me a better community member, maybe help me understand how to be a better steward of the environment around me, or help me understand people and places that maybe I'm unfamiliar with, then why wouldn't I subscribe to a niche streaming service like WhoDocs? So yeah, you're absolutely right. We're kind of riding that wave, you know, and I think we see that, we saw that through the pandemic. We saw that people wanted to maybe go out of their way a little bit further, maybe spend a little more effort to try and eat at their favorite local restaurants. And so ways, methods, services popped up to help us do that.
Yeah. And we have, you know, as consumers, we have maybe a budget, a limited budget. And we could spend 100 and some, which most people do, for a cable that brings everything, including all the stuff you don't want. You know, they say 160 streaming channels, but most of them are not worth having. Right. And that model's being flipped because of these curated models. I can still spend my 100 and some dollars, but I can spend it on 5 or 6 streaming services that I really care about, and the other stuff I don't care about. So it's flipping that model as well. And I think those days of just anything goes on I'm even seeing it curated on other kinds of things. And so I think that that is a natural evolution in there. Yeah. Caitlin, as a filmmaker, you talked about community. And I guess one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, does the community help inspire you? Does it help after you've done a film? Does it help you want to do something else? Talk to me about how community is helpful to you as a filmmaker.
No, absolutely. I would say all the above, honestly. In particular, the inspiration from the community to lead to the next thing, to, you know, it is, I think it's very common, especially for an Indiana filmmaker, or at least through my experience, to be approached and be like, I got a film idea for you. Because it's very like in Indiana, you know, we don't have filmmakers at every corner, you know, filmmakers are not Starbucks. So when you meet a filmmaker and you live here, you're like, oh, I got an idea, you know, and that's awesome that the community is so excited and so supportive of that local art. So, you know, you get all these ideas, and then the support behind, like when you're trying a thing, is also amazing. I'm super grateful for that here. And I think that also is something we get to experience. It's cool too, because then that community support, as you keep growing and growing, paired with Who Docs, and your friends are like, oh my gosh, you're doing it. Like, and it adds that extra legitimacy to know that it's going to land somewhere, or that it has landed somewhere. And so, yeah, it's just cool. It's cool. And it's a place to kind of direct people when they're like, oh, have I seen any of your stuff? Or where can I see your stuff? And knowing that it's kind of in one place is cool too, especially like for a long-term career. It's essential. So yeah.
And you're getting feedback directly from the audience that you're trying to have an impact on, rather than rather than through a set of critics, which generally how we typically have gotten our feedback. We don't you know, we can get yays and, you know, they clap in the show. We can get those, but we generally didn't have a vehicle in a typical movie to get that direct feedback from the people that really are paying to see it. And I think that's critical.
Yeah. Well, you know, especially for independent filmmakers, the festival model has always been huge. And so, you know, we love our festivals. Heartland Film and Indie Film Fest are both partners of Who Docs, and they do amazing work to put a spotlight on especially independent filmmakers. Both of those festivals have Indiana specific categories even. And so we love that. But, you know, they'll admit that, you know, they're a festival once, or like, you know, with Heartland, you've got the shorts, you know, twice a year. After that, it's like, well, I didn't make it out to Heartland, so I didn't see, you know, Caitlin's film. Or, you know, I made it to Heartland, but I only made it twice. You know, I didn't see every film. Obviously, where do I see it now? So really, the independent filmmaker is sort of back in the same boat that they were before, with kind of like what we call like the post-show blues. Like I do, like when we premiere a film and like there's a theater full of people and you're like, this is it. This is why I do this. And then the next 2 to 3 days are miserable. Like for me, seriously, I don't even want to leave the house. I feel so terrible because it's like, now what? What do I do now? Like this film is never going to feel as good as it did in that moment. And so I think that I try to replace that, because I do think that as powerful as that feeling is, I love it. And I want, you know, every filmmaker, if possible, at some point in their life to feel what it feels like to have a theater full of people enjoying their film. But I think that we can kind of create a long tail effect after that too, and say like, all right, well, you know, a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, when somebody is interested in the topic, I can still share my really passionate and I think that the project that means something to me. It's almost like, it's like a child. I have 3 children, so I can say that, you know, my films all feel like kind of like children to me too, you know, in a very different way, of course. I don't want to forget about them. I don't want them to just sort of disappear into the internet abyss. I want people to continue to enjoy them.
I think that's the beauty of film, because you can archive it. You can keep it. You know, one of the hardest things I think museum people have, and I was an exhibit designer, is that we have to destroy those creations to make room for the next one. And there's no really any way of preserving you know, what that experience was, nor do they necessarily want to. But in filmmaking, gosh, somebody could look this up, you know, 5 years from now, because that's a topic they're interested in. And it's in a format that they could get it and they could find it and they can search for it. So again, that curation that you're talking about, both of you, it's so, I think, critical to not being just in the moment, like you said, with festivals, but being way beyond that. But it still keeps it narrow without as much clutter. And so again, you've got, even though you may be collecting films over 5 years, it's still a much narrower view at that.
Yeah, and I think that's what's actually been really funny and surprising, how many people, I think in some ways, just kind of assumed that something like this probably already existed and they didn't know about it. But the simplicity of, all right, yeah, we're focused here. We're narrowly focused on films that are either Hoosier focused, about an Indiana person, place, thing, story, or they're from a Hoosier perspective. So, you know, a film that may not necessarily be Indiana centric or focused, but has an Indiana perspective because the filmmaker is from here. And that's a, yeah, that's a pretty narrow focus. And they're all documentary, nonfiction, you know, and so it's nice because then we know that we're serving up what people are expecting. People aren't going to go to Hudox and find, you know, a slasher flick, you know, not that I'm, you know, I'm fine. If you want to watch that, great. There are places to watch it. But you know that you're going to find nonfiction, documentary, story-driven, character-driven, oftentimes films that, you know, feel community and socially relevant.
Caitlin, you know, I don't know that our listeners or even I could describe what a filmmaker is. Can you describe to me what does a filmmaker do? I mean, I think we know the role of director or producer, all that, but what is a filmmaker?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it's a definition that is a case by case, human by human basis, because you know, it definitely depends on where you are location wise. I think it's such a collaborative art form that this is hard though, because it's like, I would say on one hand, it can really just be so powerful when a lot of talented artistic people come together and create a film with their specific skills and expertise, you know, writer, graphics person, you know, animation, director, musician, we could just keep going. There's all sorts of art forms that go into film. But at the same time, you know, the idea of like the best camera is the one in your pocket and just creating something from your own mind and just telling a good story. Like storytelling is its own specific art form that feeds into filmmaking. And so, yeah, it's interesting because I think a filmmaker is a storyteller. They lean into what they're curious about, what they're passionate about, and whether they create a world out of their own mind and do some sort of fiction piece, or if they find, you know, and really just highlight what's going on in a community that they're inspired by, and tell that story. Like, I think it is, yeah, filmmaker is a storyteller, and that can be, you know, one person, or that can be, you know, I don't even know how many people how many people were on the Avatar piece, you know, by James Cameron piece. I say that like it's an art film, and you know, like
some would argue that it is.
Right.
You know, I would argue just, that
I'm
it
sure
is.
Sure. the folks slaving away in the, you know, in the graphics department, they probably are like, I'm an artist, and they, because they are, and that's cool too. Yeah. And with that, I like, oh my gosh, I'm getting a little deep, but like humans tell stories. And so anyone can be a filmmaker, and it's just, and that's the cool thing about that. We're creating this thing where we can show off local people's work, because there could be someone who enjoys the subscription and then wants to make a film about, you know, their neighbor. And maybe they've never touched a camera before, but if they just lean into like the story and what they're curious and passionate about, they can be a filmmaker too. And that's awesome. I like that question though.
It gets very philosophical. Love that we have a filmmaker who's represented in the Library of Hudox with three very unique films. And one of them was the one that he made in high school. He was a senior in high school, and it's just about his little brother going to the state Rubik's Cube Championship And it is, and he would, you know, be happy to admit this himself. It is a, you know, it's a film that was made by a high schooler. You know, it's not exactly the highest quality thing in the world, but it does tell a really good story. And he's now out in LA. He's worked on some really great films over the last year or two, big name films. But I love that, Caitlin, that you mentioned that I would want people to watch Who Docs as well and feel inspired and think like, well, I could do that. I could tell a story. I could, you know, and I think that not everyone will do that, and that's perfectly okay. But I think it's really valuable that we inspire people who do want to do that and let them know that it's possible. I think that you also hit on a really great point that everybody is so incredibly unique. And that's what I think makes filmmaking in general that special, but Who Docs special in its own way, because even when you think about this somewhat narrow focus of Indiana focused nonfiction content, you know, you could be tempted to think, oh, well, okay, so they're all like, you know, Ken Burns style documentaries with, you know, pictures, and we're going to have a voiceover and we're going to talk about something historical. And there's nothing wrong with documentary films like that, but that's a very narrow focus or very narrow view of what documentary film can be. And so, I don't know, Caitlin, I'm going to put you on the spot. I love the way you share sort of your particular filmmaking kind of position or what inspires you. And so I'm just going to ask you directly, like, what do you tell people when you tell people what you sort of make films about? Because I love it. I think it's great.
Oh, right. Yes, I love finding things that at face value or in like the first few minutes, you're like, I don't know, okay, maybe. But then like finding what's so beautiful and lovable and unique and like interesting about it, and then highlighting that. And thus, you know, most of my films are nature films about kind of creepy crawly species. But I think that that is something I've always been interested in the sense of like meeting people, talking to people, and like just finding what there is to love about them, finding what there is to love about a community, finding what there is to love about, like, oh gosh, yeah, I get attached to things. Like, I remember when my parents threw away one of our like clothing irons, and I was just like, what, just like that? You're just going to get rid of it, you know? Like, anyways, it's just like, you just showing the world what there is to love about everything is kind of my approach to storytelling. Because couldn't the world be such a better place if we all just like, for telling stories about things that we love, then we're getting in that practice of being empathetic about the thing, and then just humans approaching and practicing empathy in every way just is going to make a better society. And I love it.
That's a really good answer to that part of it. And that magic of storytelling that you're both talking about, you know, that's what works in a lot of different media, but it's very unique, isn't it, in the filmmaking, in that you don't always have to have words to tell your story. Mm-hmm. So you're using the art of other things, of the visual.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
I would say, Katie, I love to hire like friends of mine who are musicians to compose the piece for my work. Because it's this like long-term collaboration and adds this emotion that you just can't get from stock music or like a relationship that you have with someone, and them understanding maybe my process is a little scattered, but if we just meet on a regular basis and I tell them what I know at the moment, by the end of it, you know, they have to have a piece and I have to have a piece, and then that piece kind of comes together, and it just makes it so much more special, because I could never compose. I mean, I'm sure I could compose, but I could just never do it on that caliber. And that's also the cool thing about filmmaking, having so many art forms, is that we all get to kind of pick our specialties and then lean into those and enjoy them. And then the result is just like some good watches.
Yeah. And you have this kind of collaborative moment, right? That, what's happening is you as the filmmaker or the person that's a storyteller might not have thought how that musician might have interpreted your story. And so they add a layer to the story. The other one is the cinematographer or the person that's actually doing the filming. And even then the editor goes in, you know, yes, you have Caitlin all along, but then you have these collaborators that are enhancing and telling their own little microcosms of the story. And I think that is really unique within what filmmaking does.
Yeah, so. It's so cool. It's I would say along with that is the premise that there's no original ideas, but it's like it's takes on different things, and that's kind of the magic of collaboration and the magic of different perspectives, like having different perspectives and infusing that with collaboration creates some really cool things.
That's great. I've been talking with Rocky Walls, the founder of Hudox, and Caitlin Calhoun, who's a board member and also a featured filmmaker, about the power of storytelling and how it can help use the art of filmmaking as a means to tell a story. Please join us for more conversation after a short break.
Hi, this is Tony Morris. Join me for an hour of some of the best music for guitar on Classical Guitar Alive. Each week, we explore a wide variety of music with guitar, and you'll also hear interviews with many of the world's foremost performers and composers. That's each week on Classical Guitar Alive.
Saturday mornings at 5 on WICR, The Diamond.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling. And we're having a conversation with two really fantastic individuals, Rocky Walls, who started a nonprofit called Hudox that really gives you a streaming service of some films that you wouldn't be able to see and curates that. And then Caitlin Calhoun, who is an original filmmaker who works on a lot of documentary kind of work. And we'll get into that about environmental issues and other things that are important to our world right now. And when we left, we were really talking about that collaboration, that moment when lots of people are coming together. And what I was contrasting that with is people that are storytellers who can do oral storytelling. They might do it through, actual storytelling. There's groups that do that. Or they might do it through poetry, or they might do it through something that's written. But that's one dimension. And then there are photographers and videographers who tell stories, but they are not filmmakers. And so what's really interesting here is the layering that you have of all of the different artists that are having a little bit of their oar in that boat. And yet you still got to get rowing to the same destination. And I would assume that's when I asked that earlier question, what's a filmmaker do? I would assume part of that is getting the beat right for the piece. If I could put that right, when they drum and they get everybody's oar going. But they all have their own strength and their own style and their own, but in the end that film's got to get made. So how do you deal with collaboration at that level?
You want to take this one, Rocky?
I think we should both.
It will show how unique
that experience is for everybody probably. Yeah. So I want to say two things. One, and then hopefully Mark, you can kind of come back to this. With documentary film specifically, I don't want to sort of leave out or miss the fact that there's another whole component to the storytelling, which is the subject matter. And especially if you're not dealing with something historical that's already sort of set, you have to think about that component as well, especially if you're following a person or developing story. That's its own unique challenge. But for me, it all comes down to trust. And Mark, you've had experience in working even with our company, 12 Stars Media, and we've gone from being a 2 or 3 person team to a 25 person team. Now we're an 8 person team, and I think for me, a filmmaker, as we've talked about, is someone who does need to have a very unique vision and be able to bring about the people who can sort of grab that vision and understand it, not try to change it necessarily, but be able to take it and make it better because of what they contribute. And so, like, I can't think of a better example of that. And I hope, I love all of the people that I work with, but I think a director and an editor has a really special relationship. And my editor, Glenn, who's worked with us now for several years, is just exceptional. And it is wonderful to know that when I'm out on set and I'm filming with someone, every time I hear a word or a phrase or I see something happen that I know is going to be special and going to be in the film, it's great that I know how Glenn thinks and I know what I'm going to need to share with him to get him to find those nuggets and weave them together in the right way. He knows that I'm out there thinking about that. And so this idea that, you just need somebody to open up an editing program and chop the stuff and put it together, is really, really an understatement and a misrepresentation of what that relationship is. And so I think that that idea that you've shared, Mark, and you're so good at reminding us of the balance between art and science and the fact that, yeah, we have tools that technically give us the ability to edit hours and hours and hours of content, but it's an artist that knows how to do that, to where to put it, how long a shot should hold, how long an audience member needs a silence between the takes, between the shots, in order to process what they just heard. All those things are so valuable and so important. And so I think that, to me, like, that relationship of director and editor is one of the most special and one of the most valuable. There's a reason why, and you could go back and look, Academy Award winning films, often, more often than not, more than half the time, the winner of Best Picture also wins Best Editing. And so it's just a really special relationship, one of many, I'll admit, like I said, but it gives you an idea of what that collaboration can really be like and feel like. And so that's where my mind goes when I think about it.
Caitlin?
Yeah, that's so interesting to me too, because I actually started my career as an editor. But it's interesting, because then I was like, oh, you know what? I do love honestly, my favorite part of filmmaking is sitting across from someone, documentary filmmaking, is sitting across from someone and like just getting in there and asking them the questions and really finding, like I mentioned earlier, what's special about them and what they're excited about. Like that, it's the moment that Rocky was kind of talking about, that those special phrases or whatever. There's also like a special time where somebody's eyes light up and you're just like, oh yeah, that's also going to connect with people when they hear them talk about it. Even if we don't like, even if we cover it with some other footage, you know, you don't need to see their eyes light up to know the energy in there is real. But the actual, the collaboration of it and the, I'll go back to speaking to my experience with, having a composer. At this point, I've created 3 short films, and the last 2 have had a composer. Eric Salazar is a local clarinetist and in charge of classical music indie, kind of their executive director there. And just a, oh my gosh, talk about an amazing human being. And he, so kind of going back to the director, and I have to have a vision and I have to kind of know, but sometimes you don't know. And it's great to have those people who know their expertise and their like technical tool, and they can kind of feel out and suss out your vision for their portion. And so it's just so much more impactful when he takes the time to figure out who are the characters and what do we want to feel at this point, because then that, you know, and then that brings the collaboration into like the community experiencing it. So it's like, to emphasize the point that Rocky made right at the beginning of his answer to this question, there is that other element of kind of, where's the story going to go? What's going on? And then there's the element of like, in all filmmaking, of how's the audience going to respond? And so, it's just a beautiful like flow and collaboration. Yeah, we've got the oars in sync, but we've also got the water. And if it's like, what's the water going to think about it? You know, deep on the metaphor. I'm all about metaphor.
Right. But the water's changing as you go downstream.
Right.
So your
weather changes,
your techniques may have to change.
Right.
In that. And it presents its own challenges. I was thinking about Rocky, some of the things that we did together as well, with kind of things along the waterway and those kind of stories. And they really are a challenge to do. And what I love about what you're doing with Hudox and the fact that you have that is that for those of us that are a nonprofit or where, like Caitlin, you're trying to tell something that's really important in terms of the environment, or we're trying to get something across, is we have really limited funds too. And so it becomes this really tense moment sometimes when we're sitting across from one another, you know, and somebody's helping edit. And what I love about this, it's a little different process, and you're enabling people to really give the story without worrying so much. I mean, it's in there, but so much about the financial aspect of that. In other words, yes, we do need to pay artists reasonably what they should be paid and all that, but you're taking away a little bit of that tension that it's how do I keep my business going, which all of us have, even when we have a nonprofit. And that's, I think that's a really important role for a filmmaker to go, okay, team, I can within reason do this documentary. And,
well, and that's,
I'm going to have support for it. I'm going to have support for it.
Yeah. And that's also the magic of having, if you can on your film, having a producer, because they kind of protect the creative from having that. And
they
that's
do.
A collaboration too, you know, to
right.
separate them from like worrying about the numbers so they can really just make the art and protect their creatives, which is a beautiful person to have.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that occurs to me when we're talking about this and the collaboration, and I love your use of the idea that how much the musician can add to something, how much actually, in a way, isn't the editor acting a little bit sometimes like a choreographer too? And in other words, they're bringing in this group of dancers, or which you would say is a bit of a you know, they have this image and they're trying to meld it with this. Aren't they choreographing this whole piece too?
I would say so. Yeah, 100%. I mean, we just watched the first cut of a 20-minute short yesterday that Glenn, you know, at first had some trouble like finding the pace for, which is, I mean, that's fits right into your choreography comparison. It's like, he realized that we had worked on two or three documentaries previously that were fairly slow and pensive, and like there were lots of like moments where you would let something sort of play out for 2-3 minutes at a time as somebody went through a process. And this one was exactly the opposite. I was like, you needed to cut, move things along, because it was a bit silly, it was fast paced, it was fun and exciting, and just like changing a dance number, you know, like it's going to require different muscles, it's going to require potentially different talents entirely, you know. Oftentimes there's a reason, you know, we all went to see a performance at the Muncie Civic Theater. We took our kids up to see Newsies, and there's a reason why when the tap number comes out, a lot of those people are different. They're not the ones that were doing the ballet earlier. I mean, sometimes they can be, but often not. And so I just think, you got a really good analogy there for sure.
Caitlin, when I think about what you do and with documentaries, in some ways, and I've watched both films, we'll talk more about that in a little bit later, but both of your recent films where you did have, you know, music to it and added to it, but I was thinking through those and realizing for myself that saying less is more, and how difficult that is. Because when you tackle a topic that might be like pollution in our environment or global warming, there's so much you could say.
Right.
So how do you, and that this is for you as much, Rocky too, how do you pull back to being less so that you can deliver a message in a very powerful, strong way rather than having it muddied with too much?
No, absolutely. And I think in my experience, no matter what you're talking about, and in my case, it's environmental things, but no matter what you're talking about, you are interviewing these folks who are experts in their own lives, experts in their own thing. And my job as a filmmaker is to make sure that we're answering the question why and not how. Because with environmental things, there's so many hows, you know, there's lots of science information. But in order for it actually to make an impact and not confuse the bejesus out of the world, it's important that we explain to them the urgency through feelings, you know, and infusing that, and answering well, why should I care about this, you know, my most recent film, this gross salamander that maybe sometimes we can find in the river, but it sounds like they're not doing so well. Like, but why, you know? And if we were just to take that 20 minute film and instead just talk about Hellbender facts, about the salamander facts for 20 minutes, it wouldn't land. It's not about that. It's about getting people interested. And if they want to know the specifics, then there's more than enough information for them to like get deep. But getting them excited and then the overarching, like, yes, the Hellbender is our character, but the environment is our why, and our, you know, taking care of our land and being stewards of land and caring about our earth. That's why. And, but also even deeper, why again, why should we care about those things? And yeah, so that's my answer.
That's really great. Rocky, any thoughts on that one?
I think Caitlin summarized it with a really solid example. I mean, just from a technical perspective, maybe a little less about, because I mean, like Caitlin's point is about, like she said, the why are we really telling the story? And I think I've been asking that question to people now for 15 years with our work at 12 Stars Media. And now with WhoDocs, I can tell when a filmmaker has asked that question and when they haven't, when we receive submissions. I think that one thing that I kind of think is a fun little challenge, and I don't do it literally very often, but I think it's a really good mindset or figurative kind of model to have in your brain. I once heard somebody, and this was talking about editing and writing, but it applies to film as well. It talked about how you get to sort of the perfect piece. And basically you start with your draft or wherever your starting point, and you cut it down by a third, and then you kind of read it again, and then you cut it down by a third again, and you repeat this until it makes no sense whatsoever. Then you use the previous version. And so I think that that idea of editing, I mean, there's also really, really great designers who have said it more eloquently about, you know, really, really exceptional design is really not about what you add, it's about what you take away. And so I think that from a technical perspective, that's really important. And I, you know, just to give people a little window into documentary, especially, although I'm sure narrative folks feel similarly. But I think when you're forming a relationship, especially with a person or a salamander or whatever it is, or the people who work with the salamanders, I think it's hard when you get back into the editing room and you have to cut and cut and cut and cut, because you know, your life most of the time has been changed. There is not a documentary that I have worked on that has not changed my perspective on life, period. And so honestly, I would watch 4 hours of people talking about the Danish concept of hygge. Most people will not, you know? And so we had to go through the difficult, you know, task of trimming that down to a 90-minute documentary. And that was appropriate. That's what it should be. Because most people didn't go through the process of making the film like I did. And so I think that's a really unique and fun, but also bittersweet challenge for a documentary filmmaker.
I think to add to that real quick, I think another thing is you get really attached and like become friends with your subjects, and like, and you know that they don't want you to cut that part out either. Like, you know, especially like with me, with scientists, like they're like, ooh. And I do worry, like it's, I have to remove myself from worrying about whether they think, you know, oh, I missed all this information, but it's like just getting to the why, and they have plenty of resources that people can also find. So.
So yeah. Really the analogy that I think of from visual arts, is the idea of the negative space. It's what's not there. And in a way, both of you are saying that, and what you're wanting to do is there that you have to give time for reflection. And when you guys you're filming it and you're doing all that, you've been immersed in it for so long in the content that you're okay because you've had those moments, but you have to give the person that's watching your film time to pause and think about what it is that you just made the point. And you so beautifully do that, I think, when documentaries are done well, you as filmmakers do that beautifully. You give us a moment to rest. It may be very brief. It may be that we're watching, in the case of a salamander moving with some music, and we're not talking over that, and we're not saying things. And I know, Rocky, what I love about your filmmaking, that you try to do at 12 Stars, it's a whole lot less about talking. It is a lot more about those pauses and that space to reflect.
Yeah, I want to put people there. And that's like a challenge that I would issue to listeners, whether you're watching a documentary on Hudocs or anywhere else. Like I said, especially with documentary, think about that perspective sometimes, that if there's a moment playing out where somebody's doing something that maybe is a lengthy process, or it's calming, or it feels soothing, or whatever, understand that there is a very real possibility. In fact, I would say it's highly likely that the filmmaker was sitting there soaking that in as a human being and thinking, wow, I hope that at least in some small way, I can convey to my viewer what it feels like for me to sit here and watch that person do that, or watch this thing grow, or watch this thing change, or watch this person struggle through that challenge, or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's really great. Just a reminder that the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversations that explore the intersections of art and science. We encourage you at home to actually explore with family and others any of the conversations that we're having, and we'll be right back.
Join us for the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artists Series on Saturday afternoons at 2 o'clock. Host Michael Toulouse brings you his fine commentary as we showcase faculty and visiting artists performing exceptional concerts and recitals from the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center on the University of Indianapolis campus. That's the University of Indianapolis Faculty Artist Series, Saturdays at 2 p.m. on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and I'm having a conversation with Rocky Walls and with Caitlin Calhoun. And Caitlin has been doing a series of documentaries as a filmmaker that focus on nature. And I know that there's two really, and I've viewed both of them, Caitlin, and they're really amazing. But one was a short film called Snag in the Plan, and I'll let you describe that to our listeners. And then the other one was Hellbender in the Blue, which I love the title. And since I am a biologist also, I know what that is, but not everybody's going to know what that is. So
when you know, you know.
When you know, you know.
Like, yeah, so it's very much.
Why don't you talk about Snag in the Plan first?
Sure. Yeah. I was approached by the Indiana Forest Alliance. They do these surveys in the woods every summer of different creatures. And they approached me to capture their search for the northern long-eared bat. And it's not doing so well because of the white nose syndrome that has, you know, come from the East Coast and is moving along and hopefully will stop eventually. But, you know, that's, again, we talk about environmental things because we need to. And so we documented their search in July 2019. And the play with Snag on the Plan is snags are old dead trees that have great little nooks for bats to live in. But also it's the forestry plan and their survey, the idea is to protect old growth forests where you will find snags. So the plan that, you know, to not log and the snag and the plan of like, oh, if we find, you know, these bats here, then that's a snag in your I'm very into puns. So anyways, that is what that film is about.
And I was amazed when I watched that because I learned a whole lot from, and again, this, you know, the show's art and science. I learned a whole lot about both, you know, the bats themselves and loving them. And at the same time, I learned a whole lot about the science of being able to track a bat. And I could not believe the size of an antenna that somebody was attaching to a bat so that they could hone in on it, and how archaic that thing looked, like it was somebody's aerial off the top of an old house for their television that he was tracking it with. And right. So I was kind of blown away by some of, you know, the message was there about bats and white nose, but I was also getting this whole other set of technology science stuff that was really fascinating to me, that film.
And a big goal, there is a scene in the film where we follow one of the gentlemen who's tracking the bat with that big antenna. And the goal was for people to feel like they were out in the woods hiking with him.
I was right there and I was going,
it was a journey. Yeah.
It was great. And then when you look at Hellbender and the Blue, what were you accomplishing with that? And that's a little bit different style of film than the other one, which I loved.
Right. Yeah. That one was made over a period of 2 years. I learned about the Hellbender right after finishing Snagging the Plan, and learned about this whole community that is trying to save this salamander that's not doing well in, frankly, just it's based in the Eastern United States, and it's just decreased pretty rapidly since the 80s. And so I discovered that, oh, we have them here. And I think there's something to be said about how, you know, we're trying to save, rightly so, like exotic species in the rainforest, but we actually have things in our backyard that we have, can have an impact on. And so that's why I'm just very excited about this film. Plus the, like, we can only find it in one river in Southern Indiana, but there is a statewide effort, and just talk about community behind helping this creature. And so it was wonderful spending 2 years meeting all these people who are doing just amazing things for this creature, and working together and trying to, you know, troubleshoot over several years, and continuing that effort, and just being able to highlight that. Plus, again, going back to my affinity for making people fall in love with not so attractive things, it like has the nickname of snot otter and lasagna lizard, because they got these weird little side things. They're not gills, they're like, I don't know. I think they're more folds for them to breathe through their skin. Anyways, so.
Yeah, because they spend so much time down in the mud and in the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. Rocky, for you curating it, what drew you to want these two films?
Well, first of all, I am passionate about people learning about our environment and being good stewards. I mean, Caitlin, I'm just like, you know, I muted myself, you know, to not distract, but like when Caitlin was talking about how we have things in our own backyard that we affect, you know, like you don't realize whether you pick up after your dog when you're taking him or her on a walk makes a difference to the quality of our waterway. Even tiny things like that don't seem like that big of a deal, are a big deal. And so having that focus and that method of telling the story of the importance of stewardship through introducing a couple of characters in the form of creatures was just fantastic. Also, I know that Caitlin is a great storyteller, and I knew that there would be really cool people and things to see in the films. But yeah, I mean, I think that to me, it's just adds to the diversity of storytelling that we have on Who Docs. I mean, there's just so much there. You can go from one night watching a story about northern long-eared bats in Indiana and then flip right to something about the Ball brothers in Muncie, you know, and learn about that historic family. And then everything in between.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, when I was talking about the technology on the bat, it made me want to go, and to your point, go and research a little bit further, because I wanted to know what about that technology. And I'm not going to get that in your documentary, because that's not what it was about, but I can go online, right? I can probably even find a YouTube video of somebody that's actually putting those on something that, you know, a scientist, and I can find that. So I can go deeper. And I love that part, Rocky, is in a way you're a portal into exploring other things that are related to the thing. So you're kind of this way of whetting somebody's appetite to just go a little deeper. And I think that's what you were talking about, Caitlin.
It is. You know, I think a good way to explain it once again is comparing to the idea of eating local as well. You know, I have a friend who says, you know, she judges a restaurant entirely by their salads. Because if a salad comes out and it's crisp and delicious, and it has, you know, maybe some things that don't just come out of the boxed mix that you buy from, you know, wherever, you know that they probably have a really good source for local high quality produce. And then you know that probably everything else there is going to be really great too. And I think that what's really exceptional is that when you learn that, and when you then go to a restaurant and you think, and not to be a snob, you know, I like a good old fashioned cheeseburger that's, you know, just as low or high quality, doesn't even matter to me as the next guy. But I think that if you can learn to to discern that and to understand the difference that it makes, not only in the flavor and in the nutritional value, but in the impact on our economy, that the farmer that was supported by buying that local lettuce is valued to our local economy. You understand the impact of the environment and the emissions that come from not, or that don't come from not having to transport that from a truck to a plane to a wherever to get it to your state, to your table. When you understand that, you begin to see the value in and actually have a greater impact through your habits of eating local. I think we apply the same exact thing. If somebody watches Who Docs and they see something and they go, whoa, that's really interesting. And then to your point, Mark, they then spend a little time online rather than just sort of aimlessly scrolling through Facebook. They spend a little time researching a topic and better understanding. Well, why did that school really close? What was going on there? I'd like to look into that a little bit better. We can maybe understand a little bit more how, like we've talked about, our impacts on land and water stewardship, but also our impacts on the way we vote in our local elections and things like that that are so incredibly important that we're hearing. We need to probably step up our game in how we understand the importance of local politics. The pandemic also showed us that as well. So I think the time is ripe for people to better listen and then research the things that are going to matter to them most in their immediate community, what matters locally, and how you can impact that. And so I hope that, yeah, you nailed it. Who Docs absolutely should be a portal to more of that understanding. And sorry, I got on my soapbox a little bit there.
Oh, no, that's where I wanted you to go. So yeah. I like that soapbox. The thing that's really interesting in all of that, what you're both saying, is really that it is trying to develop a compelling, not only story, but really a subject. Like, so in each of those, Caitlin, you have something that makes me want to care about it. You know, so the scientists are in there and the science is there, but I'm watching that poor little bat and it's got that sad nose. And then I'm watching that salamander who might be gross in some ways, but the way it was filmed made me, you know, just, it was kind of cuddly. I don't know why it felt that way.
Like you shouldn't cuddle it, but you kind of
like you shouldn't,
to.
But yeah. you know, you're not supposed to touch it, but yeah,
I've done my job, which feels that, I mean, that is the best compliment.
Well, thank you
for Hellbender. Yeah.
But it's that art that you guys are using as a photographer. The two things I always worry about are, one, making sure there's a subject in there, because everybody can take a landscape. You know, they jump out of their car, they take a shot, but if there's no subject to it, because you can't just say the landscape's the subject, there's something more to it. And the second one that I think you did really well in these films, Caitlin, is the idea of it's the angle or perspective. Everybody could shoot the same thing you're shooting, but not everybody can shoot it from the angle that you're choosing to shoot it from. And so it's funny. I was watching a course online on photography the other day, and the guy was so great about talking about that everybody can get out of their car in the same place, walk up to a big cathedral, take the same picture from the same angle, and there's hundreds of thousands of the same picture all over at different qualities. However, the one that makes it the artist is the one that walked around behind or got down on their back and laid down behind it or did something and had a whole different angle on looking at that same perspective of it. And that's what you are really doing as a really good filmmaker. You are changing that perspective for us. So I really appreciate the work that you've been doing on both.
Thank you so much. Both of you said a lot of nice things, Mark. So very, very much appreciated.
Well, I think both of you are, it's really wonderful to have both of you. And I want to thank Rocky Walls, founder of Who Docs, and Caitlin Calhoun, who's a featured filmmaker. Encourage you to go to Who Docs and become a subscriber and a member of that. And I will put up on our website how they can do that, Rocky. And until next time, I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you that we explore the intersections between arts and science through being very curious about the world.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.